Welcome back to our ongoing series Around the Horn with UBS Asset Management's Fixed Income Team. I am pleased to welcome this month's featured speakers, top portfolio managers and business heads from AM's Muni Taxable Fixed Income and Liquidity Teams. We'll hear candidly from them on their views on markets and what they believe financial advisors should be focused on within the fixed income space. Joining us today, we have Anthony Liotti, head of the Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group, and to serve as our moderator for today. Anthony is joined by Dave Walczak, senior portfolio managers for AM's Liquidity Strategies, Dave Rothweiler, senior portfolio managers for AM's Short Duration and Liquidity Strategies, Dave Vignolo, head of AM's U.S. Corporate Fixed Income Strategies, Patrick Mativage, portfolio manager for our U.S. Multi-Sector SMA, David Michael, portfolio manager for Emerging Markets, and Lisa DiPolo, senior municipal bond portfolio manager. As I mentioned, Anthony is going to moderate our discussion today, so with that, pass it over to you.
Great, Siobhan, thank you. Appreciate it. We have a very deep lineup once again today, so we'll get right into it. I'll have some broad-based comments and then turn over to the PMs to get into their viewpoints. So clearly, what a dizzying start to the year we've witnessed thus far. I think we could all agree that developing and properly implementing a plan is essential to success, right? Whether it be for a household, a business, an investment portfolio, and even for a federal government. And yet, in any planning process, we must acknowledge a certain degree of miscalculations, inaccurate assumptions, which may require adjustments or even a complete revamp. And I think right now, that is what many financial advisors and investors are grappling with. The relentless posturing and or rhetoric policy shifts coming out of Washington have clearly had a bit of a profound impact on financial markets, leading many to question whether their investment plans need to be reassessed, right? If we just take a step back, we go back as we entered 2025, which was only 10 weeks to go about, expectations of American exceptionalism were in full force. A strong economy was seen as the foundation for an equity market where many industry experts had set equity targets of the S&P around 6,500, if not a little bit higher. Within fixed income, there was a broad-based assumption that the Federal Reserve would remain on an extended pause throughout the year. Bonds, which we're here to talk about today, were viewed as an attractive investment, right? Expected to deliver returns primarily through, I would say, coupon carry rather than necessarily significant price appreciation given the expectations for a very range-bound interest rate market, right? And then lastly, you had sort of the two wild cards, inflation and employment, right? The expectations of tariffs on global trading partners, coupled with, I'd say, the potential, which we're seeing now is almost actual, retaliatory measures, had raised concerns that inflation could obviously accelerate. However, what we've seen thus far is a bit of the opposite. Interest rates have moved lower, bond prices have risen, which are really just fears of an economic slowdown. Which again, the ripple effect of that is it's increased the probability of Fed intervention, which was not on the table to start the year off, really, coupled with a potential recession. Inflation continues to move in a positive direction. We saw that a bit of witness today by the recent CPI release. Employment continues to remain on solid footing, but we haven't seen the impact of the government job cuts yet to be felt within the data, and we'll clearly have to account for that in the coming months. But it's the unknowns, right? It's the policy shifts. It's the economic cross currents and geopolitical developments that are causing businesses and individuals to pause the decision making, ultimately weighing on the broader markets. And I think we've said this before, markets, as we all know, hate uncertainty and the lack of clarity. So I'll kind of end here a little bit of where I began, which is it time to get aggressive with changing or adjusting our fixed income allocation? And I say no, not necessarily, right? We have long talked about volatility in 2025, given the impact of the second term of the administration's policy agenda. The key question is, how do we frame this period, right? Do we look back and see Washington's actions as reactionary short-term moves like a game of chess? Or is it, do they provide to be strategic tactical maneuvers more akin to a game of chess, right? Not chess, not checkers. So with that, I'm going to give the more difficult, challenging part to our PMs to get their views of the market and how we are currently positioned within our portfolios. So let me turn over to the PM side and start off the call like we always do with the front end of the curve and Dave Walczak. Dave, take us away, my friend.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Anthony. So maybe just a few comments on our side first on the inflation report that we got today. As you rightly pointed out, you know, it did come in lower than expectations, but I think when you look at the details a little bit more, you know, especially in terms of, you know, what drove some of the downward or surprise downward movement relative to expectations, it was concentrated in some of the transport categories like airfares and auto insurance. And, you know, importantly, these components do not feed into core PCE deflator, which is the Fed's, you know, targeted measure for inflation. So, you know, we're going to get PPI tomorrow, and then we'll ultimately see kind of how the PCE deflator ends up at the end of this month. But, you know, just kind of want to make that point on the inflation side. But yeah, you know, as you also pointed out, Anthony, quite a bit going on, and especially if you're Fed Chair Powell, a lot of things to consider here. But, you know, I think one thing that has been consistent amidst all this, you know, volatility has actually been the Fed's messaging. You know, they've continued to stress, you know, patience from a policy standpoint. We've heard that from numerous FOMC speakers over the past couple of weeks, most notably Fed Chair Powell last Friday. You know, one of his quotes, which I thought was pretty interesting, you know, saying as we parse the incoming information, we are focused on separating the signal from the noise as the outlook evolves. We do not need to be in a hurry and are well positioned to wait for greater clarity. So I think that just highlights kind of where the Fed's at currently. You know, as you look at expectations for their meeting next week, you know, the market's pricing in no change. I think the market's going to be looking for, obviously, you know, further updates from Fed Chair Powell, if he does have any beyond, you know, his comments late last week. But also, too, crucially, we are going to get an updated dot plot, which I know, at least for us here on the front end, the market tends to pay pretty close attention to. Just quickly, you know, the last one that we got was at their December meeting that showed two cuts for the course of this year. And then just kind of looking at where Fed funds futures pricing is today, we're seeing about 71 basis points for the cuts priced in to that curve, with the first full 25 basis points priced for the June meeting. So that's kind of where we stand today from a Fed pricing standpoint. Just in terms of what we've seen elsewhere kind of in the front end here, you know, just thinking specifically about the bank funding markets. You know, floaters, we've continued to see good volumes going through there as spreads have continued to tighten. But actually, over the past day or so, we've started to see some floaters cheapen up a little bit. You know, not a lot. You know, we're talking maybe 1 to 2 basis points, but it does seem like investors are pushing back a little bit in terms of some of the floaters, the floater spreads that we're seeing here within the money market space. But, you know, still we're seeing, you know, decent buying going through. Investors seem to be, you know, attracted to even just the small slight widening that we're seeing here in the market. You're just looking at assets and money market funds. I know I bring this up on every call, but, you know, we kind of hit another all-time high, at least in terms of assets as measured by the ICI. We actually crossed $7 trillion. In AUM and money market fund assets, which is up just under $180 billion on a year-to-date basis. And with that, I'll hand it over to Dave Rothfeller.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. So as Dave just mentioned, the CPI came in a touch lower than expected. So looking backward, we have a little bit of comfort. But looking forward, we have the ongoing uncertainties around the tariffs versus the still-be-determined, you know, budget, tax policy, regulatory environment, possible peace in Ukraine, and the list goes on. So lots of uncertainty, you know, translates to a lot more vol around rates. Looking at the two-year, and I'm going to concentrate everything on the front end, we started the year with yields hitting almost, you know, 4.4%, and we rallied down to 390. Now we're back to 4% as we speak. So given these uncertainties, we've added a touch of duration. For instance, right now we are targeting around a plus 0.01 to 0.02 versus our benchmark in the short duration 1-3 strategy. Moving on to the curve, market is now pricing in a reduction of 75 basis points in the overnight Fed funds rate, as Dave mentioned. Since our last call on February 12th, when the front end curve was mostly flat, now because of the change in Fed expectations, the U.S. Treasury curve has become inverted in that 3-month to 2-year area. However, while U.S. Treasury curve is inverted, the corporate credit curve pretty much saves the day and allows that, you know, the corporate credit curve to be flat, allowing the investors to lock in yields approximating the current overnight rate. Staying on with credit, investment grade front end spreads have been relatively well behaved versus some of the equity vol we've recently seen. Barclays 1-3 OAS is around 61 basis points. That's only about 11 basis points wider since year end 2024. Looking at the 1-3 B of A indices year to date, the financials versus industrial option adjusted spreads have continued to grind in, and that continues to be our favorite place in corporate credit. Lastly, given the recent uncertainties in the market, we have continued to focus more on an up in quality focus, if you will, as triple B's have slightly underperformed the A to triple A's year to date. We have moved to slightly increase our U.S. Treasury exposure as well as our double A and better ABS exposure. So, and as usual with that, I'll hand it off to Dave Vignolo. Dave?
No, thanks, David. You know, on the investment grade side, it's, you know, this past month, we've definitely seen weakness in the space. You know, generally spreads have been, 10 to 15 basis points wider from a month ago. And it really, you know, just the overhang, as Anthony mentioned, and everybody on this call is talking about, just the tariff uncertainty. And then I'd say across the board, including UBS, many investment banks have lowered their growth forecast for this quarter. You know, it seems like 1 to 1.5 seems to be the consensus view on growth across the board, and just in general, thoughts that inflation may be a little stickier as we move through, you know, the first half of this year and how that, you know, unfolds with the tariff uncertainty. So lowering growth expectations, the tariff uncertainty has weighed on the space, and then on top of the macro situation, we've seen a lot of supply, tremendous amount of supply the first quarter. We typically see a lot of supply, but we're almost $500 billion in new issuance in the first quarter. We're about $460 through yesterday. But just to give a frame of reference, our forecast for the year is $1.5 trillion. So a third of it, looks like we're getting it close to it in the first quarter, and we got three more quarters to go. So you can do the math that the supply overhang and then the macro uncertainty with growth and falling yields has been, you know, tough for credit to absorb in such a short manner. So we've underperformed a little bit from just widening from that perspective. But I will tell you that inflows into the asset class continue to be quite robust. Overall yields continue to hover around 5%. And when you have that in conjunction with even though growth is slowing, it's still positive. And our base case is still that, you know, slowing economic environment, but still, you know, positive economic growth, and not thinking that we're moving into a recession type scenario, is still very supportive for the asset class. So we continue to see that positive from an inflow perspective into the space. And I think that from a fundamental perspective, we still see a lot of this first quarter. I think there was like 30 to 40% of companies in the earnings call mentioned tariffs. So as I think Anthony mentioned earlier, the uncertainty element, the we don't like uncertainty in fixed income has weighed on, I think, overall cautiousness from the investor community and corporate America as this plays out. So we expect, you know, CapEx to probably slow down, just in general, maybe hold a little more cash on the balance sheet as things play out over the next, you know, month or so or quarter. In the second quarter, we should have definitely more clarity on some of the situation we expect. And just so across the board, I think that, you know, with that, you know, fixed income from a top-down perspective, as long as we stay in that range of rates, you know, the kind of, you know, growth is still positive. As things settle down, I would expect things to start to improve again in credit, and spreads will start to resume their tightened bias that we saw most of, you know, last year and the previous year. So, you know, I look at this as, you know, for selected, you know, opportunities and in issuer exposure, new issues, secondary market opportunities. So we're definitely looking to take advantage of that. But I will say, from a strategy, you know, perspective, we're definitely trying to maintain a slight overweight to duration in this environment for our active intermediate strategies, and also being more cautious on the cyclical sectors and sectors that might be more adversely affected by a slowdown in economic growth. That we're all expecting, you know, this quarter and most likely into the second quarter. So, real no changes on our thoughts on curve positioning. We still like the belly of the curve. And I think, you know, from a total return perspective, I think overall the corporate index has a positive total return of about over a little over 2%, which, you know, is in this environment it's pretty good when you have spreads widening, but then you have interest rates falling, you still maintain your, you know, a positive total return. So, which I think is another reason that's keeping investors engaged and invested in the investment grade space. But outside of that, still favor financials. No real changes. I think M&A risk will probably slow with this increased volatility with corporate America kind of pulling back a little bit to see how things unfold. But in general, the tariff uncertainty is probably the number one thing that's keeping everybody a little bit cautious because it's just, we're going to have tariffs. We're going to extend it. We're going to change it. It's just, it just wears on you. And I think a lot of people then just sit a little more cautious in terms of their investment decisions. But we're taking advantage of some situations in the secondary market, as I said, is in the new issue market as well. So other sectors, you know, utility sector, we still favor that as an overweight. The energy sector, even though oil prices are falling somewhat, their balance sheets are quite strong, so we haven't really made any changes there. We still favor the energy sector. And we're also looking to add exposure in the telecom and media sector through new issue opportunities and any kind of select opportunities that present themselves in the secondary market. But overall, no change in our view. Still favor investment grade credit. Still think this is an attractive opportunity with overall yields above 5% and expectations that growth will remain kind of even though slowing growth, but still a positive growth trajectory in 2025. And as you know, I heard, you know, what David Walczak mentioned, you know, almost three cuts are priced. The number of six or so weeks ago was one cut. Now it's three cuts. So the market knows the Fed has that in their back pocket. If things get ugly or something happens, they can cut pretty quickly. And everybody kind of knows that. So that's kind of out there still that they have ammo to cut if they need to, if things do deteriorate quickly in the from an unemployment and a growth perspective, they can move pretty quickly. So, you know, with that, I'll pass it over to David Michael to talk about the emerging market space.
Thanks, Dave. Overall risk tone continues to be set by rates and President Trump's tariff-related headlines. This has also contributed to a rotation trade, resulting in lower U.S. rates and a weaker U.S. dollar. Over the last month, emerging market spreads were not able to keep up with the U.S. Treasury rally of 30 to 40 basis points. EM spreads actually widened by about 18 basis points. Combining the Treasury with spread returns, total returns for EM over the last month was around 1%, and that brings the year-to-date positive return over 2% for emerging markets. Emerging market primary supply started off the year with fairly robust issuance that declined as we moved through February and again into March. In 2025, we expect to see the same positive technical we've seen over the last few years, where investors are receiving more cash from coupons and maturities than availability of new bonds. Last week, the EU, and especially Germany, announced a large fiscal expansion plans, led to strengthening in the euro, the rally of European equities, and a sharp rise in European yields. This and the prospects of a ceasefire in Ukraine are positive for European risk as well as emerging market risk. OPEC announced an increase in production that put pressure on oil prices, raising concerns around global demand, especially with U.S. tariffs dampening growth expectations. We're cautious in credits with that are reliant on high oil prices. Low oil prices, however, should lead to lower inflation pressures and improve external balances for oil importers. China has shown a resiliency to U.S. tariffs. Tariffs are not likely a major concern for Chinese credit markets, as the Chinese government remains focused on their domestic economy. Mexico showed weaker than expected investment consumption data, and domestic demand is expected to remain weak. As Mexico faces high interest rates, fiscal consolidation, and signs of a softening labor market, and mix in tariffs and USMCA uncertainty, the central bank has taken a more cautious approach to its easing cycle. In Panama, on the back of pressure from the U.S., Hong Kong-based Hutchison sold its stake in the ports to BlackRock, or a BlackRock-led consortium for around $19 billion. This could relieve some of the pressure on Panama from the U.S. We continue to see positive tail risks over the upcoming year. When geopolitical tensions such as Russia-Ukraine are solved, this is very positive for emerging market risk. The consensus on Trump policy implications on inflation and a strong dollar are likely to be challenged and remain volatile. Emerging markets have remained resilient, and EMFX and U.S. equity markets, as U.S. equity markets have reflected downside risks from uncertainty around tariffs and growth. These shifting dynamics and the importance highlight the importance of active management in emerging markets. This is an environment where idiosyncratic stories will drive performance and uncertainty from President Trump as he makes active management great again. Now let me hand it off for an update from our multi sector team.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Michael. And I would call it an evolving perspective on the balance of our risk budget from the multi-sector desk of late, and in a word, fairly cautious. In rates, we remain generally more constructive across our broader book of business. We added some incremental duration in recent weeks out of what amounts to respect for market action as we broke through levels lower. General term remains that range-bound market, somewhat mounting evidence of a shakier economic backdrop, especially in survey data on the one hand, but still above target inflation on the other, and pair that with a Fed that's steadfast in getting inflation in check, as Mr. Walczak alluded to. 4.15 is a level of interest on the 10-year that we've tested and failed to durably breach twice now, back in December, here again March 3rd. 4.65 is the more recent high that we saw February 12th, and it's in that general range we'd suspect rates would be apt to traffic in. But the market is still searching for that catalyst to send rates well higher from here and keep them there. And as such, we're content to own the duration that we do, believing balance of risk clearly laying more on the growth side of the ledger than the inflation side of the ledger, at least at the moment. In the same vein, and in what's been an abundance of caution, we've slightly paired some credit risk exposure this past week, again, out of prudence, instead preferring to source more of our duration budget from treasuries versus some of the higher octane portions of our allocation from a sector and name perspective. Consider that alongside the weakening economic fundamentals that everyone here has mentioned, we've also had generally more pessimistic tone and outlook from a larger cohort of corporations in the releases, and they've, as again prior mentioned, frequently cited economic uncertainty amidst this global trade picture. Recent releases from the airlines and retailers specifically come to mind. That was also echoed this last week by Citi and Goldman, both cutting their economic as well as equity projections this last week in headlines you might have seen. Recall, demand for credit has been such a tailwind. Viggs alluded to this earlier, and that's been a huge support for spreads. The concern, though, would be that slows or reverses in line with a broader risk-off appetite, which would lend to further widening. That said, and interestingly, in this backup, flows have been fairly consistent still, which does speak to the appetite the investing public has for all-in yields at these levels. That said, we're still well shy of longer-run spread averages for major credit indices like U.S. investment grade and high yield. And in other words, you couldn't contend that we're extremely cheap, although we are somewhat cheaper. Lastly, from our view, no material change in attitude as related to sector composition for the moment, at least outside of how it builds out our overall credit risk profile. With that, I'll turn to Lisa DiPaolo on tax-exempt municipals.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I think, Anthony, you were on point just describing really the current climate as dizzying. If we look at the Bloomberg Municipal Bond Index, it has taken a turn from the strong monthly returns we saw last month to larger declines so far this month, just as muni rates underperformed the Treasury sell-off and bid wanted list climbed to $6 billion. I'd say some investors have maintained a more cautious tone, and that along with weaker reinvestment dollars just has translated to growing secondary offerings and just more muted appetite in general for primary issuance. So really, despite LIPR reporting 7 consecutive positive weeks of net inflows into muni funds, 872 last week alone, the market's just been challenged in general, just with heavier calendars, lighter demand, supply pressures. We have seen supplies been elevated so far this month, about $23 billion between last week's and this week's issuance. But on the flip side, demand is spottier. And as a result, we've been seeing growing dealer balances. More recently, the front end of the curve 10 years and in did seem to be steadier, with longer end turning more negative. Today in particular, following the number, we are seeing more general weakness in the market, and we are finally seeing some adjustments in yields moving, just shifting to higher levels. MMD right now, they're looking right now, proposed for today, to do cuts ranging from 3 to 7 basis points 6 years and in, and then 6 to 12 basis points out longer. So I think at these wider levels and just with rates rallying back, it does seem like there is some increasing interest in the market at these adjusted levels. I'd say the best performing area of the curves we've seen to date include outperformance seen in that belly of the curve. The 5-year to 10-year muni bond index right now, if you look, are the best performers year to date. And municipal valuations, we've seen some cheapening just over the past month, ratios all slightly higher, so representing similarly greater value to the investor. Total supply in March, like I said, some issuance last 2 weeks, we're looking maybe another 20 million over the next couple weeks, so about 43 to 47 billion on average. We will be watching the market's response as March brings forth just a reverse set of technical factors, with municipal supply outweighing demand, weaker redemptions, and just tax season looming. If you look back, March historically offers mixed returns just with gains in 15 of the last 28 years. Just more on the floater front, so that since that is part of our portfolio, we have seen an uptick in daily VRDN and weekly VRDN resets to like a 380 as we approach tax time. We usually do see, you know, these yields cheapen just as funds sell floating rate securities are raised for taxes. And we have seen some continued normalization on the muni curve to date, flattening inside of 10 years. But overall, there is just growing market volatility, as we know, surrounding tariff concerns, legislative proposals, and then just potential economic slowdown concerns as well, and just ongoing rate volatility. So it is still weighing on the market and investor appetite as a whole. And on our end, as we manage duration targets, we have, over the past month, reduced our extreme barbell. We have reduced some exposure in our strategies in the longer end of the curve and reallocated to some shorter areas of the curve where we feel there's opportunities to add yield without extending exposure to rate volatility and duration. So no recent changes in duration. As we get more information and clarity, especially the Fed posturing over, over the year, we'll probably make appropriate adjustments across our strategies. We have been reducing exposure as well in some weaker single-A names while adding more to AA and AAA high grades. And I will say on the credit side of note, the healthcare sector remains volatile as the market digests how proposed congressional reduction in federal Medicaid spending will impact credit performance. So because of that, we remain negative on the healthcare sector, and we're actively looking to reduce selective credit exposure in favor of increasing the credit quality of our portfolio. And our expectation is that the tax exemption remains intact, although some sectors couldn't be impacted, including higher ed, healthcare, as I spoke about, and private activity bonds. And with that, I will hand it back over to Anthony.
Great. Lisa, thank you. A great recap of the muni market, and there's still a lot of wood to chop with DC is again. So with that, folks, we are literally hitting the 30 minutes. We typically have some questions, but we do need to move on to other speakers for the on-air call. So I would just say thank you all for the team tuning in and your comments, and for all of you to take the time to tune into this call. Please feel free to reach out to your regional sales director or anyone on my separately managed account investment specialist team for additional color or discussion regarding your client portfolio. So with that, have a great day, a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you in April. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.